Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to the Fighting on Film podcast, the podcast all about classic and obscure war movies, from the Normandy landings to the days of chivalry and swords. If it's been captured on film, we're going to try and cover it. I'm Robbie of RM Military History.
I'm Matthew Moss of Historical Firearms and the Armourer's Bench.
Hello, welcome back to Fighting on Film. Now, this week we bring you our belated review of the final episode of Masters of the Air. We originally planned to do this back before we had our short break, and this week seemed like as good a week as any. So, Matt, episode 9, we're finally at the end of Masters, a little bit later than everyone else, but I think we should just get into the episode, shouldn't we?
I think so. I know a few people have been waiting for it and have mentioned it on the socials, hoping that we'd circle back to it. And last week we had to, of course, return with Civil War, and now it's time for a little bit of Masters of the Air.
So this episode starts with a aerial sequence in last week's of the war in 1945, or last month, should I add, around the time of the Soviet push on the Oder River, February 3rd, 1945. And Crosby has some narration, and he said, "We were finally true masters of the air. A Rosie and the crew are on a bombing run over Berlin. Their engines hit, front turrets blown out by flak." That part was quite shocking.
Rewatching that. Sequence.
Yeah, a guy just gets blasted out of the front turret. And then engine 3 is on fire and the fort starts to go down. And Rosie decides to take the fort over Russian lines. And it's one of those things in history where you think this is one of those mad stories that just seems too good to be true.
Oh,
but
yeah.
It happened.
It just seems so incredible in the truest sense of the term.
Yeah, like massively so.
Yeah, like fanciful, sort of. What a journey he ended up going on as well.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Which we only see a tiny fraction of in the episode.
Yeah, exactly. So he's the last to bail out, and he lands in between Soviet and German lines east of the Oder River, and he's injured his arm when he lands, and he finds a crater made by a shell, and he's trying to get his pistol out, and his arm's really hurting. And some Russian troops find him, and they raise their rifles to him. And he says, "Stalin, Roosevelt, Coca-Cola, American," which kind of reminded me of the Betty Boop guy from Saving Private Ryan.
Oh, yeah.
Just a tiny bit.
Yeah.
A little bit like that. So I actually found a newspaper article from the time, which sort of documents a little bit more what actually happened to Rosie. So he said, "I landed in a field, and the next thing I knew, I was surrounded by Russians. I thought they were Germans, and I threw up my hands. One of them lunged at me with a bayonet. I yelled, 'Amerikansky.' and a great light came over the fellow's face. He put down his gun and threw his arms around me, hugged me and kissed me. I must have drank 2 million gallons of vodka, which I could have well done without. And then much like episode, I want to say episode 5 or 6, where they had the concurrent storylines, this mm-hmm. one flits between...
It does, yeah.
Lockie in the prison camp in the Stalag. And they awoke up in the evening, and they have only 30 minutes, and they're undertaken, taken on this forced march to a new camp.
I like that sequence where the you know, they're getting the they're building little sleds and stuff to pull things along with them, provisions and stuff. And one guy stuffs his face with a tin of like
meat.
I think it's like spam or something, isn't it? And he says, "Don't do that." And he goes, I don't know when I'll eat like this again.
Yeah,
and then
he's
like, next scene he's thrown up because Hurling. His stomach isn't used to it.
Yeah, exactly.
They're on like malnutrition kind of basis of rations, aren't they, at that point?
Definitely.
That whole sequence is interesting. There's interesting little bits and bobs that visually and audio intersplice. There's a bit where someone's shouting, the Krauts have opened all the tins already, so that the food will go bad and that kind of thing. There's lots of detail in there.
There is. It's quite fastly edited as well. There's not a lot of time to wait and see what's going to happen in this sequence. So Ben and Bucky think about running, but they don't due to the bad weather. The Germans start burning the camp, and then as they're getting escorted out, there's a young German guard, and he shouts at the men to move. And you know, get on the way. And it reminded me, I don't know if anyone will remember this meme, but do you remember the meme of the prefect at school where he's like, "Move now, I'm really sick of you." Do you remember that meme?
No, I don't remember that one.
Oh, it really reminded me of that. Like, he's just so irate. It made me laugh.
There's lots of really good little lines in that sequence though, where Sully says, "I'm as good as a Jew on a midnight walk in Germany can be," when he asked if he's okay and that kind of stuff. There's some really good little lines in there. That sentry kind of in the subtitles he's talking about, that's how you treat these sky murderers, and you know, and
that's it.
You've got to just be violent with them. And he's the one that later on during the forced march sees all of the troops going forward towards the Russian lines,
Like the scratch force, like the Volksgrenadiers or something.
Yeah, that's a great little sequence actually. And he's like, he throws a salute, and it's "Salute our heroes, Heil Hitler." And he's one of those guys that's still staunch, probably through naivety and being young and having his only experience of the war so far being a guard at a Stalagluf camp. A lot going on. There's a lot of interesting stuff to unpack. And having watched it 3 times now, like, there's bits and bobs I've noticed on each one.
Definitely. Yeah. So a really cold, embittered march. Matt mentioned the scratch force of either Volkssturm or Volksgrenadiers going past a column.
Yeah.
You know, as to echo Matt, you know, how it sort of shows that Germany is collapsing, and teenage soldiers, you know, it's doing its job, sort of build you a picture of the war as quickly as it can.
Sully carries that Luftwaffe sergeant's MP40 for him at one point.
Oh, of course
he collapses.
Yeah, that's funny.
That's a really interesting little bit. I noticed in that sequence though that there's a variety of cold acting going on. Some of them are very good at doing cold acting.
Yeah.
Some of them don't look cold at all.
Maybe not. No.
You know what I mean? You spot any of them? There's a few of them in there that don't look that cold when they're doing those panning shots.
They're just built different, Matt. They're just built different.
Hardy
They've folks. Acclimatized over the years of being in the camp.
True.
So the men feel like they might be executed at any moment as they're being moved. They end up in Nuremberg, and Bucky talks to Egan, and he said, "Only two B-17s left. It'd be me and you flying them. Last few years would have been rough without you, John." So their friendship's still as strong as ever. And then you have a sequence where they go through Nuremberg or a town near Nuremberg, and it's still showing the toll taken on the German populace with the bombed out cities.
Yeah.
Then they find another camp, and Bucky meets a George, who's another baseball fan. I like that kind of moment. They're still finding these little moments of friendship and camaraderie, even as their situation, you know, could change at any moment. Then we're back with Rosie in Poland with the Soviets. He's with a an officer. His car goes past a death camp, and he goes inside to see what's happened, and it's a very affecting scene. Nate Mann, I think, throughout the whole season, has been a real standout in his portrayal of Rosie Rosenthal. And then there's he's looking in one of the barns or one of the camp's buildings, and there's burnt bodies and dead body, death everywhere, and a Soviet translator or you know. Someone who's been with Rosie comes and says, it
looks like a staff officer,
something.
It's a useful bit of exposition, that scene, and I like the way they built it up. So he enters the camp and he doesn't immediately see anything. You can just smell it. You can tell by his face and mannerisms. And then he turns the corner and there's a chap that's been hung in the wash area by the big wash sinks they have. And then there's a couple of corpses on the ground, and he turns another corner, and then he starts seeing the burnt corpses, and they get more progressively burnt, and then he goes into a building. And the way that scene builds is very good, I thought.
It's really, really affecting. There's a line that he says when he goes over, I think the staff officer paraphrasing, but he says, there are lots of places like this. And Rosie says, he stumbles over his words because there's more of them. And it's delivered so well, like this realization that the veil has been lifted from Rosie, because we've heard all the way through that he's been very up for the fight because of the way that the Jews are being persecuted and killed. And that's his biggest motivation. But until this point, he hasn't actually seen with his own eyes the devastating effect of the Holocaust on his, on his brothers, on his, his fellow men. So it's very affecting for him. And in real life, Rosie goes on to give evidence at Nuremberg. I think he's one of the prosecutors at Nuremberg, which is incredible. What a life the man had. Then Rosie boards a plane to Moscow, and he makes it back home. And then we're back with Buck and Egan, and they decide to run. And Egan saves Buck by stopping a German from shooting him. And then there's a riot that nearly ensues, where the major is saying, you can't shoot John. He's one of my, top officers. I need him for this. Please don't shoot him. And I like in that scene, I like the little moments that you were saying earlier with all the men cower behind like the rubble of this town, and they're picking up like bricks and stones ready to, like, if it kicks off there, they're going to be ready to defend themselves. And I really like that scene. It still shows that even after this forced march and being so cold and, sort of emaciated for malnourishment, they're still ready for the fight. They're still ready to defend their friends. I really like that part of that scene. Two other men escape with Buck, so they're on the run now. Later on, when they're running, they're trying to find American lines. Everything they hear, they think, oh, that's a GMC. But it turns out to be a German truck, so they have to hide. And then they're sleeping in a wood, and two young German soldiers attack them in the morning. And one of them gets bayoneted. Bucky manages to disarm one of the
well, they're Volkssturm, aren't they? They're
Volkssturm.
They hit the Jürgen Volkssturm.
Yeah, young Volkssturm.
And they, it's quite well shot. The chap's having a leak against a tree.
Mm.
The other two are asleep, and you see this shoulder and a bayonet, and the bayonet sort of like pauses for a moment and then lunges, and he stabs him a couple of times, stabs him again. And it's brutal.
Yes, well done.
And Buck manages to subdue them, and there's a little fight, and they find out that neither of the Germans had any ammunition in their rifles anyway.
Yeah, and there's P-38 the boy had that Buck gets, and he goes, oh, they didn't have any ammo. But then in that scene, it made me, I've seen it a few times now. I'm like, so why is the kid pleading with Buck if he knows there's no bullets? Or does the kid not even know there's no bullets in his gun?
Maybe not.
I was thinking.
Maybe not. Big, interesting continuity there. But that's an interesting sequence. And the horse and the wounded horse sort of riding by, that's a nod to a lot of tropes and visual storytelling, kind of the collapse of how things are going.
Yeah, it's showing you subtly how things have gone. And then I've got here, like, I like the commitment to weight loss by Bucky, or at least the makeup by Butler. Like, he looks like he's been through it in those sequences, you know, really cold, gaunt. I wouldn't put it past Butler to have lost weight for these sequences, you know, knowing what he did for Elvis. It seems like a very committed, I wouldn't say his method to a point, but I think he's nearly there. You know, and definitely from some of the reports on set, you know, he was talking in the accent the whole time. So, you know, maybe he really, you know, does go down deep down into his characters, and I appreciate it. Then Rosie's back at Thorpe Abbott's. He explains to Crosby that he flew back in Churchill's plane.
Yeah, and then the two men. Cool.
Really cool. Yeah.
Did you notice in that scene that there's a Toby jug on the mantle?
I did. Nice little 12 o'clock high reference.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Really nice. I thought that was a lovely little direct reference there. And then Crosby starts talking about the toll that the war's taken on him. And he quotes Nietzsche. And he says, whoever fights monsters should take care not to become a monster himself. If you gaze into the abyss gazes back at you. And Rosie replies in a quite typical Rosie fashion by this point, we're here to fight the monsters, Cross. We did some tough things, but we had to. There's no other way. So I like
that. Yeah, and he kind of points to the fact that, you know, anything we've done is nothing in compared to what he's seen.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's justified. Justifying their own existence at this point, because you know, how many men have they lost? You know, the Munster raid, the endless missions, you know, countless men falling out of the sky, you know, not going home. I can understand, but I like the duality of the characters, where even though Crosby at this point has transitioned into more sort of a desk kind of role in doing the navigation for the group, it's still having this massive effect on him, because it's just he's cooked, essentially. You know, it's this whole thing, you know, by 1945 everyone wants to finish the bloody war. You know, they don't want to keep doing this, you know. I appreciate that scene. It's very good. And I think at this point as well, the dynamics between the characters are really good, because you've been with them for so long. Then, you know, Bucky makes it home as well. So does Egan. But Egan hasn't made it home yet, sorry. And he's in a camp mixed with other pals. There's some really good allied representation there. I think there's nearly every single allied combatant.
Yeah, there's Indian troops, there's Australians. There's a nice little sequence where a couple of the Tuskegee Airmen make eye contact with some French African troops.
Mm-hmm.
That was really cool. It's a very interesting little sequence in the camp, because they're not there too long before a P-51 sort of strafes the camp ahead of the Allies liberating them. And this is Mooseberg, I believe. And there's an interesting little bit where there's a Volkssturm detachment just outside the wire, and one of them tends to turn and run, and an officer shoots him in the head. You blink and you miss that little bit there. Mm. There's Germans in camo, so there's SS milling about, and the flag that Bucky takes down, is that a Kriegsmarine flag?
It could be. It doesn't might be a Luftwaffe one, actually.
Could be. Did they have a similar one with sort of like the elongated cross?
Could be. I'm not hot on my swastika in the middle.
Neither am I. I was like, oh right, that's not the normal. Could be a Luftwaffe one. I'm not familiar with Luftwaffe flags either.
Yeah, but no, I love that little.
Did you spot the Denison and the Barry wearing Paris?
I did. Yeah. I was thinking, were they captured at Varsity or Market Garden? You know, it's interesting.
How clean was his Denison? You could tell by.
It was
how fresh
worn.
His Denison looks.
It looked worn to me. Like everyone
could have been Arnhem then. Could have been Arnhem.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you know, and those Denisons don't keep you warm. No way. So I hope he had his battle dress underneath. But I like, you know, I really like that little sequence. It's nice. Apparently that did happen. You know, there was a camp with amalgamated allied prisoners. And I think it's a nice way of the show finally showing a little bit more representation of the allied cause and the allied soldiers. I think it's decent enough. And it's just nice to have it in there. Then we're back with Rosie and Buck again in Thorpe's Abbott. They take Crosby and Kenny the engineer on one of their aid runs into Holland. And we
I love that bit. I love the fact that the crew chief has never been on a plane.
Yeah.
And that's just one of those little things where you go, oh, of course, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
He wouldn't
It's
have.
The 40s. He wouldn't have been on a plane. He probably got shipped over there. It's just, I really enjoyed the montage of, you know, Churchill's armistice address as well. And you know, the reactions of the various areas.
Really, like nice.
The Red Cross ladies, the people in the canteen, and the locals, yeah. And all kinds of elements of the base. It kind of pulls the entire base together in that
really
one
nice.
Sequence.
No, I like that. It's nice. But going back to the sequence over Holland, which is the last air sequence you get, really, there's another little one at the end. But it's the last sort of, it's not bombing in this sequence. It's the last raid over like enemy, not enemy territory at this point, really, because it was, it's
well,
meant
it
to
is.
Be.
It's
way,
kind of like part of it still controlled by the Germans, but not a lot
of it. Operation Manor and Operation Chowhound, which were the Allied operations to relieve the famine that was going on in the parts of Holland up by the German lines. And that's really nice. Really nice little shot. And they see a thanks Yanks thing that the Dutch have put out on the floor. And it's a lovely
in a flower field, isn't it?
It's lovely. And I think I liked it because it's the final act of the war for Rosie, Cross, and Buck are not dropping death, but dropping life. I really
like
that.
It's a very good bookend, isn't it? Yeah.
Mm. And then, as Matt said, the war is over. Churchill's speech is made, and there's a party in the mess. And then the boys start their fly home. And we have a post-credits on what happened to the real men. It's a very quickly edited episode that does round everything up well enough. So I think we'll have a quick little alley tally, and then we'll get into our thoughts and your thoughts on the series.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's time for Alley Tally on Fighting on Film.
Alley Tally, Matt. Got anything this week?
Mentioned a lot of it. Just the inclusions of Volksturm and some of the Allied chaps appearing in there. There's some interesting vehicles pop up as well.
Yeah.
We see a lot of German armor. There's also a couple of CGI Shermans that attack the camp.
Yeah, there's a real one as well, cool. That your lad gets out of, which was nice.
Yeah, yeah. Copy pasted CGI ones attack the camp and then we get the.
Can't blame him by this point. We're trying to save a little bit of money by not using a real one, which is decent.
But There's lots of nice little bits in there. The P-38 was pretty interesting to see with the Volkssturm. Nothing really stood out. I like the nuances of the uniforms and how they've been weathered and aged and that kind of thing.
I think they were wearing later war flight suits in the early sequence, but I can't be too sure. So I think it was nice.
Well, they're in Silver Forts as well, so they're in G's.
Yeah.
But the model has is an F model, but it's just got the silver.
Oh, okay. Nice.
There's no the remote gun turret at the front.
No, it's not on there.
Is invisible on the model. So they're in. It's silver, like a G, later war G, but it's an F model kind of thing. And I believe on Woody's show with the SFX supervisor, which was really good, he talks a bit about that and all the nuances and intricacies of when the model work together and stuff. So if listeners haven't found that, go and check that out, because it was really
Woody
interesting.
Had some great guests on for the entirety of the Masters run, actually. There's a end of season sort of view episode with John McManus and a few other experts, which is really worth your time. I couldn't really pick much out. I think the Soviet kit, what I saw, was good enough.
Speaking about that, when I first watched it, I thought, oh, that looks a bit naff. That they've not really fleshed that out quite very well. But on like third viewing, I was like, oh, actually, that's not as bad as I thought it was on first viewing.
There's a lot of Soviet kit knocking around the entire war. So you still see lads in like early telegreekers and the collared tunic that they wear. But at this point in the war, it's winter, so they are mainly wearing like their heavy greatcoats and their Yushanka hats. So it's good enough. I've definitely seen photos of guys wearing the early war collared tunics late in the war as well. Even though the Soviet army has a massive, it restructures itself in around 1943, just before Operation Bagration, I think. But I still think they're using pretty much anything they've got. I don't think real standardization came in at any point.
That's such a big army.
It was good enough from what I can see from my living history days of doing Red Army. I think it looked okay.
I like that the Russian, I think, colonel or brigadier was in a captured German staff car.
It's nice. Nice little things. I liked one other thing that I really liked was when the children that have been at Thorpe's Abbott, who've become friends with the crews and the ground crews, the little lads in a knitted Mackinaw coat style cardigan that his mum or auntie must have knitted him. I really like that. It shows that
one's got a little field cap on.
Yeah, one's got a little flight
lieutenant's
like a jacket
bar
on.
Yeah,
like maybe like a they've taken a one and sort of like chopped it up and made it into his size. Like I like it's cute. I really liked it and it showed how how together they were and sort of friendly. It's really nice. I think that was it for me. The fort name of the week, 100 proof. Quite like that one.
That's what I've got too.
Lovely. Very good.
Yeah, fort of the week is 100 proof. That was my pick too. So that's nice.
Yeah.
We haven't had fort name of the week every week, but when we have, they've been good.
Yeah.
Just before we move on to everyone else's thoughts on the show, I will mention, because I forgot to do at the beginning, this one was directed by Timothy Van Patten. And this is actually the first episode he directed in the series. So he's been entrusted with the finale. But if you look at his prior work, you can see why he's been entrusted with it. So he's worked on The Wire, Deadwood, Rome, The Sopranos, The Pacific, Boardwalk Empire, Game of Thrones, Black Mirror. And I think he's working on an HBO show right now called Black Flags, which is about the rise of ISIS. So another one of those.
Oh, wow. Is that a series or a...
Yeah, it's a mini series. Yeah, that should be interesting. So he's had an impressive career. So I can kind of see why they allowed him to take the final episode without having previously done one, which might seem a bit counterintuitive.
Yeah. So I've got my only criticism for this episode, really, before we move on to the listener's thoughts, is I think you could have got a couple more episodes out of the series, because I think I watched a couple of the episodes to build up again, just to sort of have it fresher in my mind. And the end of the series does feel quite rushed to me. Like I feel like Rosie being in this, being with the Soviets, falling into the Oder River area, could have been its own episode, without a doubt.
Be its own film. My primary critique of this episode is that you look at Rosie's actual journey and the people he met along the way and the places he visited. you could easily make an entire film about his experience during the war, and that'd be the culmination, and it would flow brilliantly well. I mean, that could be the culmination, but you could culminate it at Nuremberg, at the Nuremberg trials.
That's very true.
It doesn't give Rosie's incredible experience room to breathe, I think, because they're trying to combine it with Buck and Bucky's escape and Crow's back on, you know, Bob Abbott's. And so it's a little bit, again, I think we criticized, not criticized, but critiqued the fact that in episode 6, I think it was, that they do try and push all of these storylines together, and it works in some ways, but doesn't work in others.
Mm. I just think you don't get enough. I'd like to, you know, at some point, you know, if we do have John Orloff on, I hope we do, but, you know, was there editing, was there push from the studio to get it to 9 episodes? You know, was there an original script of 10, you know, 10, 11, 12 episodes? Because it feels like it. You know, I'm very much with Matt, where I feel like I want these characters just to have a little bit more room to breathe, a little bit more room to talk. Because I feel like you get snippets here and snippets there. But by and large, I do think it's a good finale. I think it rounds itself up pretty well. I just wanted more of it, really. I mean, that's not really a criticism. That's a good thing if you want more of something, I guess. But moving on to your thoughts on the series. So a few weeks ago, we put out a tweet asking you just that. So we had our tweet on X, or I don't know if you call them tweets anymore. So we had X's. 225.
Can we call them X's now?
X's, yeah, maybe. Ugh. Elons. Musks. So we had 225 likes and 154 replies. We were absolutely floored with the response from you guys. So obviously, we're not going to read them all because we'll be here forever. So if we miss yours out, we're very
sorry. That's what you think.
So I'll kick off with Lydia Jane. So she says, oh, the bit where Rosie's trying to bail out, utterly terrifying. So well done. Definitely my favourite person of the entire series. Beautifully and thoughtfully played by Nate Mann. I think we can all agree on that.
I love that sequence. We didn't talk about it too much at the beginning. I thought it was a very impactful opening. It was a return to form with the aviation sequences.
Yeah.
Didn't quite know where those two rockets came from. They seemed to come from the ground, and I don't think the Germans had ground-launched rockets. But maybe an expert can chime in on that one. I don't know.
Actually, Matt, I think you'll find the Germans don't have. No, I'm joking.
Yeah, no. I think they were developing them. I just don't think they fielded them. But the way he fights...
Matt is a rocket man behind the scenes.
The way he fights through the fort when it's doing its dive, and he manages to get out the door because he thinks that the bombardier is still alive. He's kind of like on the floor.
Mm.
And the way the aircraft's moving, it looks like he's trying to like get his attention, like call for help, but he's actually,
yeah,
you know, sadly already dead.
No, it's good stuff.
Great sequence.
Mm. Masters of the Air behind the scenes on X goes with could have easily been a series over seasons like Game of Thrones or Yellowstone. So much material and subplots to cover. I think it's a good thing if you want more of something. Mm-hmm. Joseph Ricky, a friend from across the pond, says phenomenal. Begin it from beginning to end. The finale was so well done, as you could have hoped for. Tony Cowards goes with, really enjoyed it, but considering it was 9-part series, I thought they tried to cram in too many separate stories, especially towards the end, it felt a bit rushed. The special effects were generally of a very high standard, and the production is what you expect, top stuff. I would agree with that.
Certainly
I would agree.
Lines up with what we were thinking about earlier.
Mm. Bill 1940 Metal Campaign says solid 8 out of 10 for me. Like the Pacific, it has an uphill struggle trying to fashion a coherent narrative of a campaign that none of the main characters are in from beginning to end, which makes it feel disjointed in places. The narrative should have been streamlined and episodes extended to allow more character development. This could have easily been achieved by cutting out recaps and trailers. 10 episodes have been better too, despite the noble intent of including the Tuskegee Airmen. And the show really sells them short with barely a third of an episode before reducing them to background characters in the finale.
Agree with that one.
I agree again. Andrew Bird goes with $250 million for 9 episodes of a miniseries that concentrated more on downed aircrew footsogging across Europe, which is perhaps where consultant Del Dye is more in his comfort zone than aerial scenes. In my view, a lot of missed opportunities. Seri Thomas goes with, I think my initial thoughts are 50-50, but I still need time to watch it a couple of more times before making a definitive verdict. Episode 3, though, and he used the, like, the sort of hand emoji of going, that's a good thing. Yeah, which I agree with. Okay, it's hard to say what an emoji looks like sometimes.
Yeah, I don't know what that one's called.
No, I don't know either. I just know what it means. Glenn Turgian goes with, I felt the show needed 2 more episodes for better character development, but it's still an 8 out of 10 for me. Mark Lambert says, could not connect with the characters like I could at Band of Brothers. I quit after 1.5 episodes.
I'd have given it a little bit
time.
Longer.
Give it more time. Try and get to episode 3, I'd say. They definitely feel like they should be watched as one thing. Rob Shipman goes with Flack. Adam Hughes says, completely lost its way in the middle series with the jumbled storylines, but a final episode worthy of a brilliant story. Aerial combat scenes mind-blowing. Overall, 7 out of 10. Paul Burns goes with, found it brilliant from start to finish, gutted that it's finished. Historical Image goes with, excellent series. I enjoyed every episode. Ian May says, great episode, 9. But like the end of Band of Brothers, the ending was okay, but not to complete in as in what happened to everyone. But I haven't watched a documentary yet, so it might be in there. Yeah, Apple put out a real Masters of the Air documentary, which is meant to be very good by all accounts. I don't have an Apple TV service, so I'm going to have to wait until it comes out in general release or get a trial myself to watch that one. Socially Distant Phil says, I thought it was an excellent tribute to the bravery of the crews who took part in the bomber campaigns. I've read a lot about some of high casualty raids and the toll they took on the crews. Our own family had members of Coastal and Bomber Command, both of whom died too. So that's interesting. Thinking it's a good representation to the men of Bomber Command overall and bomber crews, which I don't think many people were saying. So I think that's a really interesting take and a really good one. World War Drew goes with, people quote characters they didn't get into. Probably same who watched Band of Brothers 20 times and then 20 years researching the characters. Read the books and dive deeper. Give Masters of the Air a bit of time and it will get better. Rosie is much of a ledge as Winters. I can't disagree there.
I would agree with that, yeah. I mean, all of the main cast had phenomenally interesting lives.
And massively.
Their wartime experiences are on a par with anything else that's different, obviously, but I would say as interesting and as valid as any of the other shows that, you know, Pacific and Band of Brothers have depicted.
Alpha put, on the whole, I adore the series, not as strong as Band of Brothers, but had some quibbles in the story, but it had my full attention throughout and was a great vehicle to help me grasp aerial warfare and strategic bombing. Well acted, designed and engrossing. Jeff Powers goes with, pretty good overall. Episodes 1-6 were great. A lot of missed opportunities in 7, 8, and 9. The series could have used a few more episodes instead of cramming in a lot in those two, or just drop the Sandra plot after 6 and cut the Tuskegees. They could use their own limited series, though. Fully agree.
They could. Absolutely.
Fully agree. I'd like, if Orloff wants another project, Tuskegee Airmen series, please.
Yeah.
Adam Blackmore Hill goes with, some individually great scenes, some individually good episodes, but as a combined series, meh.
It seems to be a recurring thing. Like people have felt that it kind of loses a little bit of cohesion towards the end, the latter half of it, I think. And I can see where they're coming from with that.
Yeah. Another one here from Giles Farmer says, 6 out of 10 for me overall. Episode 5, the best. Some plot lines felt rushed. Why didn't they show how Buck crashed? The downed airman in France suddenly appeared in England. Tuskegee's story appeared out of nowhere. Also, Buck's mumbling. Spent the last episode asking my husband what he said. I must admit, sometimes Butler is a little bit like, he's giving it a bit of the Elvis mumble a little bit.
And I agree with the fact that they do gloss over things. Like I mentioned it a moment ago, but Rosie's entire journey back sounds from that one sequence with Kroz so fascinating.
I agree.
They could have had him on Churchill's B-25, couldn't they?
Could have had a scene there. That would have been really cool. You know, even just having him sitting in there, you know.
Yeah.
It would have been enough.
Tapping on the little hyperbaric chamber he had. See if he was in there.
Mick has quite a damning response here. He goes, very meh, to be fair. I suspect in the cold light of day, 6 months down the line, it won't be remembered particularly well. Interesting. Time will tell on that one. James M. goes with, started great with some fantastic aerial combat, albeit dodgy CGI. A couple of episodes were a waste, including 330-second shoehorned in. Could have done with more Schweinfurt Regensburg episode. Make it longer, or a two-part episode. All in all, decent, but could have done better. And I think we'll end this one on a positive. So it's been a little bit of a mixed sandwich, this section. we'll end with Dewey Oxenberger, who says, amazing show. They could have done a series on so many of these people who live truly extraordinary lives and after the war. There we go.
That's it. That's the whole thing. It leaves you wondering what people's lives were like after the war.
Yeah. But
at the same time, so many stories that wartime stories that would have made incredible films or series.
There were so many out there that could be adapted.
And this is the thing with the war movie genre is there's so much material, real life material out there that can be drawn upon and crafted into some really interesting films that just haven't been touched or unearthed. You know, shout out to the FOF listeners for having some insightful opinions there, as I expected.
Really varied and really interesting responses on that thread. So I think we should move into our thoughts on the series, Matt. Do you want to kick us off?
Absolutely. So for me, I thought the series was strong, especially episode 3, which I think you and I both think is, you know, some of the best TV we've seen in a long time. Best war movie genre.
Yeah,
TV
I would actually say to people, if you're unsure on the series, watch episode 3 first to get a taste.
Like me throwing you in with Best of Both Worlds for TNG.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So as I said, it's a strong series. You know, there's a lot to commend in terms of production design, direction. The cast is incredible. The principal players have done a really, really good job of bringing these characters to life. The writing's solid, very good in places. Olof brings some really interesting nuance to the dialogue while still kind of grappling with a huge amount of subject matter. And in terms of not only different units, but, you know, different operations and an entire campaign that's all brought together into 9 episodes of TV. The CGI, I thought was very good. And I know there's technical quibbles that people know better than I about these sort of things. And that's fair enough. But in a televisual experience, I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah.
We've already banged on about this, but even within the characters that we follow, the stories are in there that, you know, they could be a whole film on their own.
Yeah, exactly. Without a doubt.
The pacing's a little bit off, and I agree with a lot of the comments on that. Some of the parts of it are truncated, some of the parts are elongated unnecessarily. And I can understand why Olof wanted to get the Tuskegee Airmen in there, and that's a noble effort to try and bring them into the story. But again, they would have been better served with like a four-parter of their own. Like, it's just, that is an incredible story all of their own. And people have tried to tell it, for better or worse, with Red Tails.
No one's done it successfully,
No one's nailed it down 100%. Will it have the impact of Band of Brothers? I don't know.
That's my eternal question. That's my biggest quibble. So I was chatting to Matt yesterday when I was watching the show, and I said, oh, should I mention this on the show or not? And Matt says, well, if you're thinking it, you can't not say it. So I put in my notes, as I was revisiting the show for this episode, I wasn't as excited about it when I was watching it for the first time. Like, I wasn't I wasn't going, oh yeah, this is a, you know, so good. I've got to get back on it. It's almost like the show didn't leave as a big of a lasting impression on me as the Pacific or Band of Brothers did. And I'm in the camp of I prefer the Pacific to Band of Brothers, but that's a completely different thing on its own. And I couldn't put my finger on it, so I sort of left it and I came back. And then later on, I came up with a theory of, I think it's because this show's come out in an era where we're spoiled by the amount of high production value streaming shows out there that we seem to get every other month, every other week. There's a new series that's had millions and billions spent on it with some of the finest actors, you know, some of the greatest directing talent that's coming out on, you know, Prime, Netflix, Apple TV, whatever you want to pick. And I think it's still a very, very good show. Don't get me wrong, I'm not putting it down.
Mm.
Yeah. But I think Band of Brothers and the Pacific had the impact they did because they came out in an era where it would come out in America first and it would get its flowers, it would get brilliant reviews, and then it would be syndicated over here on terrestrial television, or someone would pick it up and they would show it weekly and everyone could sort of, you know, watch it weekly and get on with it, and it was like a cultural phenomenon. And it was an event. And I think
we're in a truly different era now.
We're in such a different era of how we consume media and how these shows are handled, where, you know, props to Apple for trickling it out week to week. So mm-hmm. it didn't, much like The Bear did, where they dropped it and then it didn't get like its flowers. And then after 3 weeks later, it did pick up. Like, it, at least they did it weekly. So it did, not much like The Gentleman, that I'm just thinking of things I watched recently that came out. I watched it. I won't rewatch it ever again. It was flavor of the week in a way. Like it was good, but it's over now. Like I can
see myself rewatching this.
Okay.
I enjoyed it, and I thought there was elements of it that were you know, fabulous.
Mm.
We've already discussed, you know, our critiques of it. But I can see myself in a couple of years coming back to this and going, I'd quite like to rewatch that.
Okay.
It's the same with Band of Brothers and Pacific.
Yeah,
I went for years without rewatching Band of Brothers because I enjoyed it when I first saw it, which was a few years after it came out. And I've only rewatched Pacific once.
Oh wow!
And
you need to rewatch that. It's fabulous.
I know you love it. I know. And I don't know if I would hold Masters of the Air and the first two to the same scrutiny, because as I say, they've come out in very different eras, and the way that, you know, this medium is made now is very different in terms of, it's an event, but it's not an event. And as you said quite rightly, it gets caught up in all of these other big budgeted things that are being dropped weekly, monthly. Yeah.
You don't have time to sit and ruminate on it.
Mm.
You know, like you're not going into work the next day or you're not going into like your friend's WhatsApp chat, but you're like, oh, did everybody catch Masters of the Air last night on BBC One? Because we're not there anymore. You know, because people probably go, oh, no, I rewatched The Office. Oh, I rewatched... I watched something really random.
We have so much on hand. It's incredible. Yeah,
exactly. And I think we've been...
From growing up with five TV channels.
Yeah, exactly.
In the late 90s.
Yeah.
To go into Sky, to go into streaming platforms where you have almost every piece of media that's been filmed in the last 70 years.
Yeah.
On call is a... When you sit down and you take a moment and think about it, it's an incredibly...
It boggles.
Jarring thing to realize that I struggle to pick things. So I'll sit down with Lauren at the weekend and we'll go, well, let's watch a movie or show, and we'll just like scroll through, and you struggle.
You do, yeah. And I think it links in as well. I worry that it being on Apple TV may hurt it more in the long run if it doesn't get syndicated, or if it isn't allowed to have a Blu-ray release, because we're seeing with a lot of these streaming shows, they don't get physical media releases. So, you know, are we going to get these making of documentaries? We're not going to get something like Ron Livingston's Diary from Band of Brothers. on set. We're not going to get all that great extra ancillary stuff that comes with a Blu-ray or a box set release. So I kind of feel like that might hurt it a little bit more, because you're not going to have like the trickle down, you know, like if you're in a charity shop, 9 times out of 10, there's a Banner Brothers box set and it's £1, and it's probably the best pound you'll spend.
Next to the David Gray's White Ladder. Yeah. James Bond's first album.
15 Top Gear DVDs. Like, yeah. But it's that kind of thing. And it's, and I also.
And a Dan Brown novel.
Yeah. I'm not going to bang on about it too much, but the lack of physical media, I think, really hurts things. And I think it's not fair to all the people that have worked so blooming hard on this, that one day Apple could just flick it a switch and remove it from the service, and then you can't watch it legally.
Never find it again. Yeah.
No, there was quite famously.
That's the antithesis of this phenomena where we have access to all of this stuff, but at the same time, there's no permanence to it. The object permanency isn't there, because it's all ethereal. It's on, it's on a server somewhere. And if that's lost, it's gone, or if it's removed just through bureaucracy or financial wrangling or that anything like that, it's just gone.
I mean, that's why I've got something like 100 odd DVDs like on my shelves behind me of war movies and movies that I hold dear, because I always know I physically got them there to watch them just in case. Then some of the films we do on the show, you can't even get on streaming. We have to buy DVDs.
It's the year 2053. Rob is in his attic. He's pulling out his DVD player. He doesn't know how he's going to hook it up to the
the hologram television. Yeah, exactly. But no,
back. I need to watch my Patton Steelbook. God damn.
Shut up. That was a bargain, and you know it. So getting back to Masters of the Air. So I've mentioned that, we would love to see more of Rosie. We'd love to see more of Nate Mann. There's just so much going on here that is highlighted upon it and explored in a way. But I'd love to know at some point if Apple had something where it's like, right, you can only have 9 episodes. You've got to cut down some sections, because it does feel that way to me. But then again, I want to talk about some positives, because I thought this series was very, very good. I really did enjoy it. I'm worried about I'm worried about its legacy and whether it will be maybe reappraised in a few years, because I felt like the Pacific's been reappraised lately and people are seeing it in a different light now. Yeah. So I really hope this season gets it, because there are some very, very good performances in here. There are some actors who I think are going to go on to much bigger things. Nate Mann being one of them, the actor that played Crosby, he's currently in a series on Apple TV about John Wilkes Booth. So, we're at the start of a career, so I'm really interested to see how they get on. The soundtrack is fabulous. I think it's one of the best things in the series. I listen to it when I'm writing. It's such like inspirational, moving score. The raid sequences are definitely some of the best we've seen in film or a series to date, regardless of the technical inaccuracies. Perhaps I think for their scale and certainly what the series was being advertised as in the trailers and all the things we heard over the years of it being made. I think those sequences are absolutely fabulous. I would give it probably, and we don't really rate stuff, but I would
decide. Oh my God, everyone is going to do it. He's going to give it a rating.
I'm going to do it.
Going to rate
just
it.
Me personally. And this
oh
this
my Lord.
The views of Robin Maguire do not reflect the views of Fighting or Film as a whole. So I'm going to side with the listeners, and I think an average score of 7 out of 10 was fair. I think that's still very, very good. If you're on IMDb and something's above a 7, generally it's worth watching, in my opinion. I've never gone wrong, So I liked it, and I don't think, apart from a few niggles here and there, it's a good series, but I don't know right now whether it's in the same rung as Band of Brothers or Pacific, because I think that comes with time. So I think we're going to have to see how this one is handled going forward.
Not my words, Lynn. The words of Robbie Maguire on Fighting on Film, the podcast.
Sue Cook's pulled out.
Oh, it's honestly, too many Partridge references. But yeah, no, I completely agree. I was leaning 7.5 if we're going to do ratings, which we don't normally do.
Seven turrets seeing, on the turret rating.
Yes. Seeing as everybody in that thread was giving it a bit of a rating, I think we're allowed on this one occasion. It's subjective. This is all subjective.
Of course it is.
It's
media criticism.
Yeah, exactly. Of the nature of reviewing and discussing media like this. But I think in terms of adding to that universe, I say universe, I don't mean World War II. I mean the universe that Spielberg and Hanks have kind of
all of the crafted. Spielbergs and Hanks Second World War cinematic universe.
Not really. I don't really mean that, but I mean the sphere.
I read a horrible Screen Rant thing about that.
Oh no!
It made my brain hurt.
Don't. So no, remove the word universe and replace it with sphere because we've got Band of Brothers, Pacific, Masters of the Air, and what's the name of that film? What's the name of the film?
Saving Private Ryan.
No, that wasn't the one I was thinking of. I was thinking of the boat one.
Greyhound,
thank you.
Yeah.
And we've got Greyhound and we've got Saving Private Ryan. Rob's probably going to leave that in. But
no, I won't. I'll cut around it. I say that. I might leave it in.
Ooh. Yeah, I know. brain fade on that one.
Unlimited power in the empty room.
But essentially, within that sphere of filmmaking television, I think it adds a lot because it adds another layer within the stories that they're trying to tell. And I think that's very interesting. And I know we've had a lot of criticism about it being very American-centric, but that's the audience. That's who's making it. That's the audience who it's being made for.
That's principally the money that paid for it. It was dollars. It wasn't pounds, you know.
So I think in terms of that, it expands and builds and grows that in a very meaningful way.
No, I agree with you.
In terms of, very competent, high budgeted, highly well-crafted war cinema.
Yeah, exactly. And as we say a lot, if it's meant that X amount of people have gone away and started researching it and maybe go into the history sphere and start working, or they find something out about their own families from it, that's worth it for me. And the fact
that is the crux of it, isn't it? At the end of the day, if people are inspired and captivated by these stories that are being portrayed on screen, then it's only a good thing for people appreciating and understanding history itself.
Exactly. And the fact it finally got made was a miracle
anyway.
So
it's a win.
I think it will help greenlight other projects. Whether it's been a financial success because it's on streaming, we'll never know.
That was going to be my final question. Will we see more shows like this?
I hope so.
I do too.
I still think there's an appetite. And as we know, there is an appetite for war media going forward because we've just had Civil War. We've just had Ungentlemanly Warfare. Less said about its opening weekend, the better. But we've had it. They're being greenlit. So I think... at the moment, personally feel like the genre is healthier than it's been in recent years.
Let's hope so.
But we'll see going forward, won't we?
As I said last week in our review of Civil War, the amount of stories, human stories, that can be told through the lens of a war movie. Yeah.
That's why we do the show. That's one of the so reasons broad. We do it. Because it's such a deeper genre than you would think, or you might think initially. And you just have to find these movies. Wait till we do that 6-hour Japanese war film.
Yeah.
So I can't remember the name of, but wait till we do that. that explores the human condition. It's called The Human Condition. There we go. I got there in the end. So I want to thank, before we round up for this week, I want to thank Apple again for sharing the series with us back in December.
Yeah.
Really meant a lot to us. I want to thank Airfix for their little discount code. Don't know if anyone used it, but hey-ho, it was there. So let us know if you did. We'll endeavour to try and get more of those kind of things when we can. And, another big thank you to the listeners for sticking with us over the period of the month off, because Masters of the Air came out, episode 9 came out, and my dad went into hospital the same day.
Honestly,
so that was interesting.
we were talking, you know, when that happened, and we were like, are we going to do it this evening? And you were all for it. You were all over the place, obviously. And you're like, well, no, we can do it, but I think we can do it. And then you made the correct decision to go down and see.
Yeah, things transpired. And I was like, no, we're going to have to wait. Yeah. So no, finally revisiting, it was lovely. And, you know, big thank you to everyone who put their views on the X post, because, you know, we love it when you guys really come in with your criticisms and your thoughts, because it really helps us build a bigger picture of how these things are seen. And we just love interacting with you guys, because without you guys, the show doesn't run, really.
Pretty much, yeah.
You know, it's just me and Matt shouting into the abyss, but like, have you seen this war film?
I mean, we do that anyway.
But yeah, no. So yet again, thanks for listening to Fighting Our Film. You can follow us on all the socials that you can think of, apart from OnlyFans. Check out the Patreon if you haven't before, if you want to support us in a more monetary way. It's absolutely down to you. Help keeps the mics on.
And don't forget, we have a whole host of cool merch as well.
And we do. We do have a merch shop.
Over on fightingourfilm.com.
Hardly ever.
Yes, we never mention it.
If you want a
we're always trying to make new weird esoteric t-shirts.
But
we do actually have some quality merchandise, good t-shirt designs,
lovely bespoke pieces,
other bits and bobs.
Yeah, some hoodie cups. I think there's even a Christmas tree decoration in there. So yeah, if you want to help the show out, do visit the shop, do visit the Patreon, and we will catch you next week for more movie reviews. See you next week, everybody. Bye bye.
Bye guys.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.